Welcome to the BenGreenfieldFitness.com podcast. We provide you with free exercise, nutrition, weight loss, triathlon, and wellness advice from the top fitness experts in the nation. So whether you're an Ironman triathlete or you're just trying to shed a few pounds, get ready for non-run-of-the-mill, cutting-edge content from BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
Hey folks, it's Ben Greenfield, and I want to welcome you to this special episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. And you're going to get to hear a few episodes just like this one going forward. A couple of months ago, I had a guy named Ty Lopez on the call, and we talked all about getting tough, how to make yourself more tough and do the hard things in life. And Ty is a guy who has worked with many, many people to not just help get them more tough and be able to jump into icy cold water, but also be able to achieve quite a bit from a personal achievement standpoint and a business achievement standpoint. And Ty is on the call with me right now because in this special series of podcast episodes, we're going to talk about how Ty takes what he calls the 67 steps and applies them into people's lives to get them success. And what you're going to hear is Ty basically breaking me down and hopefully not beating me up too bad, but kind of giving me a little bit of coaching. And you get to sit back and watch and listen and kind of see how this works and how these 67 steps, which you can go to now and read if you want to. They're at BenGreenfieldFitness.com/67steps. But you're going to get to see how these actually apply to your life. And the reason I'm doing this is because, frankly, Ty's episode was one of the most popular episodes we ever had. So I know that you guys really hopefully like Ty, and you certainly appreciated his message then, so I want to bring you more of him. So Ty, thanks for joining.
Thank you, man. And yeah, thanks also for opening up. I know, you know, me and you have been working together a while on kind of business coaching stuff, me helping you. Of course, I see you as a health coach for me. I loved your book, and I've been passing on the message. So I actually was just recording one of the 67 steps. You're in quite a few of them. I talk about beyond endurance, and I talk about, you know, how I've learned things with you kind of as my health mentor. So I guess our mentorship kind of goes back and forth. I help a little bit with business, and you help me a lot with health. So,
and for any of you who
I'll probably get the better end of this deal.
For any of you who are concerned, I haven't yet convinced Ty to like put on a Speedo and ride a triathlon bike down the highway or anything like that. So
you would want to see that. We'll keep that for pretty boys like you. You look better in the Speedos.
So, Well, Ty, I mean, like, you know, like you said, you've helped me out quite a bit, coaching me, giving me advice. I mean, I've been down to your place down there in Hollywood Hills and kind of sat on your back porch with you and talked a lot about life and business. And you're full of great advice, and I just really want to share that with the folks who are listening in. So where do we start?
Well, you know, since it's a public called, I just, the stuff that I do, you know, I usually keep confidential, but you've been gracious enough to open up. So I wanted to just, as you and I have done privately, show some of this stuff, you know, on this call. So the way I usually start out, you know, in 2001, I used to work for GE Capital, spun off a company with a business partner doing financial planning. And during that time, you know, I've been doing that for now, it's been over a decade, and worked with a lot of people, about 6,000 people one-on-one, and then whatever, a million people follow, about 1.4 million people follow in 40 countries. And doing that, I don't say that as numbers to brag, because the interesting thing about it is not the number, it's that I've seen consistent patterns like me and you talked about. So, you know, the first one I always say, I developed this concept of weak link training, which really is relevant to, I was just rereading Arnold Schwarzenegger's Total Recall, and there's a chapter where he talked about his calves and how when he met Reg Park, who one of his mentors, he was like, man, this guy had calves and mine looked so weak relative to the rest of my body.
It's like a classic bodybuilder statement, right?
Yeah, my calves are. But he said, Reg Park said, I got a solution. And he said, I was doing 250-pound calf raises, and Reg Park threw 500 pounds on there. And he's like, I'm going to rip my Achilles. And then Reg Park threw 1,000 pounds on. And he said he started doing these reps, and he got to, they grew 2 inches. And he said people started accusing me of having calf implants. So from that, from the old story of Achilles in mythology, I came up with this weak link training. So, you know, my first question to you is, if you had to break it all down, nobody can fix everything in their business, but what do you think is the biggest weak link? If we can start there, you know, we can make big impact with relatively little change or trauma, you know?
Yeah, you know, my biggest weak link is that I love to start things. Like I love to come up with ideas in my head about solutions that I want to solve for people and start into solving those solutions and, you know, write the first chapter of a book or start into a program to help people train for a triathlon or, you know, a half marathon or something like that. But a lot of times I'll commit and then I'll wind up committing again and committing again. And it seems like all of a sudden I'm spinning a bunch of plates and nothing's getting done very well. Everything's kind of sort of getting done very slowly, not very well, but there's not like one thing that I'm laser focused on. It's like I'm always jumping all over the place, starting new projects and painting myself into a corner from almost like a busy work standpoint.
Right. Yeah, I call that, you know, one of the things I talk about this in 67 steps. I'm like, avoid flurries of activity. A lot of entrepreneurs, and by the way, you know, what you're saying is the classic entrepreneur issue, myself included. I think some of us, we read Richard Branson's book and we're screw it, let's do it, which is, you know, one of the recommended books I tell people to read. And we're like, man, this guy had a record label. He had went to build a company to create space travel, you know, ships, rocket ships, and he did Virgin Trains. And if he can do it, surely I can do it. But the truth is, when you look at the timeline that Richard Branson did this stuff, he stuck with things. You know, he started with a magazine and stuck for a long time. So the entrepreneur fallacy is that, and I think for myself, I don't know what it is at a root for you. I think it's a little mix of different things. Some of it's innocent ADD that we have in business, but some of it's ego, where we go, yeah, I know there's 7 billion people in the world trying to make money and acquire. You know, I never use the word money. I call it scarce resources, because that's really what it represents. We got 7 billion people trying to acquire scarce resources, and I can beat them on 10 different war fronts. And if you look at wars, the guys who lose wars are the ones fighting 2 or 3 front wars at the same time. So I think once you acknowledge it, like you said, and then you really start looking at the pattern, that's why I'm so big on reading biographies. I just finished Jeff Bezos' The Everything Store, the story of Jeff Bezos. And one of the lines in there I like the most, talking about how Jeff Bezos was from a little kid. They said he was excruciatingly focused to the point when he was in first grade or kindergarten, he went to a Montessori school.
Yeah.
And they said that he would sit in the chair, and when he was focused and it was his turn to rotate to another chair, he was so focused they would have to pick up the chair and move him. He would be like zoned out as a first grader. And they said, we knew this kid was either going to be, you know, handicapped or something special. And it turned out he built a $38 billion company that's going to maybe be one of the first $1 trillion, you know, $1,000 billion in revenue. So once you get that, that's really the pattern, man, over and over. So start when you are approaching projects, go, I'm Ben Greenfield. I'm a smart dude, but I'm not smarter than 7 billion people that I'm competing with. And like Charlie Munger says, if you're lucky, you can be good at one or two things at life and you can leave an impact around those.
Yeah, it's kind of weird because I always was really good at photo. Like when I would read books as a kid, I could sit in the living room and we'd have company over. We'd have like three families over and I would sit there and I wouldn't look up for like 6 hours. And you like I would just read and be completely focused. I did watercolor paintings and played the violin and you know I'd grab a bucket of tennis balls and serve for 3 hours in a row. And I'm still the same way. Like even on these projects that I start, like I'll work all day on a project, but it's kind of weird. Then sometimes I'll just drop it for like 3 weeks while I do a bunch of other stuff and then come back to it. And when I'm there, I'm there, but it's kind of weird. It's like, once I get drawn away from it, that focus just kind of disappears.
You know, I was just reading this Dr. Mollum's Inheritance book, or I was talking to him on the phone, and everything is now flexible genetics, epigenetics. So what's really happening is you are at every moment and every action that you take, you're retraining your genes, the sequencing, and not the sequencing, the enzymes. It's really everything he says, Dr. Mollum told me. If you haven't read that book, by the way, it's anyone listening.
What's it called again?
Inheritance by Dr. Sharon Mollum. He's a top geneticist. It's mind blowing and is right up the alley. What we talked about toughening up. He's basically says, look, and Richard Dawkins, I was reading The Selfish Gene again. He says it's genetic whether somebody will jump into a river if a kid is drowning, which men or women will stand up. That courage gene, it's literally genetic. And what Dr. Mollum says is this used to be thought of as fixed, rigid. You're born brave, you're born this, but he says, we know that that's not true now. We know that these genes and everything he says happens at an enzyme level. And he says what happens with our enzymes is that our body wants to conserve them because enzymes are one of the most quote unquote expensive processes and substances to build. So your body constantly is trying to turn off enzymes. He says it's use it or lose it. So this ability to focus beyond one day on a project is literally the stakes are high, I guess, Ben, for you. The inability to do this will continually rewire your brain deeper and deeper, even now at a gene level we understand, to where you will become less and less focused. So you have to nip it in the bud. You know, when I work with people, I'm like, I'm a tough love guy. I'm like, think of it. And when I talk to people like this, it oftentimes snaps people out of bad habits. It does it for me, and I've seen it over and over. Once you realize you're literally are an open book of rewiring, and that you have children, you're setting an example because there's something called memes, which are not physical genes, but they're social based genes. Everything like that not affects not only you potentially permanently, because even though your genes and you can change. Over time, it becomes harder the longer things get set in stone, the longer the habit, the more out of shape somebody is, the harder it is to fix. So for you, you have to see it in terms of I'm getting mentally overweight. I was talking to somebody and everybody was talking about six pack. And I'm like, what about the six pack of the brain, man? I'm like, what would be more powerful? I'm all for having a physical six pack, but I'm like, you know, the brain is a physical part of your body. So you need to have a physical six-pack in the sense that it is honed and it is conforming to your will. Just like you push your will as it, you know, doing this Iron Man stuff, you have to be able to push your will because the reward is high and the consequences, unfortunately, are also steep. And you will pass on that trait to your children. If you're listening, you have kids, they will pick up on your habits.
In your readings and what you found about epigenetics and things of that nature, have you come across some of the habits that people have in this day and age that tend to cause them to become chronic multitaskers or tend to rewire their brains? The reason I ask that is like I read something a couple years ago that showed that there was pretty strong evidence that you could actually change the way that your brain fires by – you know, working on five small things at once, like texting and emailing, et cetera. And that was one way that you could change your brain. But, you know, in terms of for both myself and the people listening in, what do you think are the biggest culprits that teach our brains not to focus?
Well, I'll tell you an interesting story. That's a great question about the Amish. So there's a book, by the way, called The Shallows. You might be referring to that book. I forget the title, the author right now, but it's a book. I'm not sure if it made the cut. I read a book a day, but they don't all make the cut on my top recommended. But it probably should make the cut down there at number 100 or 200. And it talks about how physically our brains are being rewired to be more shallow, primarily through technology. So,
oh yeah, what The Shallows, what the internet is doing to our brains.
Yes.
Okay.
Cool. And it's basically, so try not to think of it as good or bad. So this is a very big thing that I talk about a lot in 67 Steps, and I'm huge. Don't think with the 500-year-old, archaic, outdated mind. 500 years ago, if you thought the world was flat, round, they were going to burn you at the stake. Or if you thought the planet Earth was at the center of the universe, you didn't think it was at the center of the universe, you might be burned at the stake as a heretic. There's no longer in those type of things. I do believe in some moral right or wrong. You shouldn't kill, and kind of like the Ten Commandment type morality. But in terms of whether it's good or bad, what's happening to our brain, I'm not going to say that it's not that black and white. What it is it's Newton's third law. For every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. So if your brain becomes more shallow in terms of it's really good at multitasking 1,000 things, not good at focusing one, in certain situations, that will be advantageous. For example, if you're coming across a book, I find people that are too focused on a book that's not worthy of focus. A book that I know should be skimmed in 20 minutes, I find some people reading. In fact, a friend of mine, we were just on a trip, and they were reading this book that literally merits a 10-minute skim for the whole week we were gone. And I was thinking, that's where you want to have the ability to go shallow. So what you really want is kind of like the ultimate athlete. When they need to run long distance, they can. When they need to run sprint, they can. Not to say you don't have your specialty, because certain body types obviously specialize in certain health activities, but you get the gist. You need to be a cross trainer mentally. So my personal story, I lived with the Amish in my early 20s for 2.5 years just as an experiment, somewhat in what it's like to live, to be tough and live before modern convenience. And I remember when I was there, very easy to be there. I was in my early 20s. We know that your brain is still very malleable until about 24, 25. And I went back, a decade later, and I visited, on and off. But about it, a decade later, around 30, I went back. And I could not kind of just relax. My body was literally like looking down at my hand for a phone. It was literally looking for the stimulation. It was over. I realized, man, we are chronically overstimulated.
You feel the ghost vibration of your phone against your thigh.
It was weird. Yeah. It was actually a kind of horrifying experience. And I was like, Ty, is this is what you become? As Wendell Berry, if you ever heard of a guy named Wendell Berry, he writes a lot about, he's kind of what they call a Luddite, in a sense, which is anti-technology. He's not totally anti-technology, but he says, technology is always supposed to be the servant. And he says almost always it becomes the master. And I realized at that moment there, I was like, wait a sec. Am I the master of my cell phone, or is my cell phone haunting me? So my advice to you, Ben, is, and you asked specifically, what are the biggest things? There's some technology things. I saw in your email where you say, I only check email 3 times a day. You might want to try a couple days a week where you only check it one time. I actually have times when I check zero. And I'm a busy businessman like you. And you know what? The world acclimates to you. People stop emailing you so much.
It's already happened since I switched to 3 times a day. And, you get rid of the boomerang effect. I'm kind of scared to switch to 1 a day or none a day. But, yeah, I see what you're saying.
Try a 1 a day. Try a 0 a day one time. If it's an app, I tell people, get in. One of the things I've talked to you about, and I'm huge in when I do this business coaching, is 67 steps. By the way, 67 steps, is to get whatever you want. But people often use it that are entrepreneurs. You can use it for health or whatever. It's pretty multi-purpose. But in this context, we're talking about 67 steps to grow a business and make impact with a business. Don't you be guided by fear. Don't say, I'm not going to do once a day because I'm afraid I'm going to miss something. In that sense, I think fear serves a purpose. But for most of us, it's like Alexander the Great said, there's only two types of people in the world. One who conquer fear, and the second who doesn't conquer it and suffers or dies. So you conquer the fear by saying it's an experiment. You try it for a day. If disastrous things happen, you go, I can't do it 0 times a day. But if you never experiment, they've actually done studies on happiness. I read it. I can't remember the book. It might be Dr. Ian Robertson's book. It was another book which says people who do a ton of experiments are generally have more dopamine and happiness. So just make your business life this huge experiment. You've gone to 3 times a day. That was an experiment. Push the envelope, man. Go once a day. Go like Richard Branson. I read in One Screw It, Let's Do It. He went to South America, he went to Africa. I had bought a big ranch or something. And he just picked up the phone once a day in the morning. And he had his officers of his company calling it. No email, just his notepad. And he's Richard Branson. I'm not saying you can do that. I am saying you can experiment with anything as long as you keep your eye on the ball, you know?
Gotcha. So when it comes to spinning lots of plates and starting too many tasks in your business or in life, basically what you're saying is that a big part of this, whether how well you were able to focus when you were a kid or when you were younger or at an earlier time in your life, a big part of this is that your genes have been reprogrammed by things like technology, email, texting, etc. And that one of the ways to get yourself from constantly juggling too many plates is to start with these small things, kind of begin to make the habits there and reprogram your brain using that type of strategy.
Absolutely. Get tough, man. Just see it exactly like you see all the physical. I mean, physical and business / mental are so closely correlated. Every analogy, every metaphor is there. Sometimes you physically push your body to whatever, 90% max, respiration or whatever. You see that when they're talking about different, heart rates when you're running. Sometimes it's like you push it to the max. And it's the same with your body. When it comes to business, it's like sometimes it's like, I'm going to go a week without checking my phone just to burn out any weakness in me. And maybe you give your phone to your wife in your case and you go, I'm not going to check my phone today.
I've done that before on dates. I've turned it off and put it in her purse and said, keep this.
Yeah, but I'm saying maybe you give it to her for a day and you go, look, just alert me if there's an absolute I understand. I mean, realistically, if you live in a world where there can be emergencies. But man, come on. I remember in 2001, Ben, I traveled around the world, no cell phone. And was none the wiser for it. I didn't realize and I was fine. I remember I got a calling card from New Zealand. I called back to America once every 2 weeks. I remember I was visiting different farms. I would call them up on the phone. I would then go write down the directions. We're so far from that right now without GPS, we think we're gonna die. I was like, I traveled 51 countries basically in my life with no internet, no phone. So you have to go. It's kind of like becoming an athlete and you're starting to get fat and you look back at the good old days. Recreate the good old days. You know, good news for you, and it's probably why you've been so successful in the things you've done, is you probably had a little head start when you were younger. You said you're naturally very focused. It's probably you have some natural hardwiring. So go back to it. Claim it as your heritage. That's what I tell people. The good things in your life, man. If I had done this, this is not just business, but my dad, for example, my real dad, I didn't really grow up with him. My mom got divorced before I remember, being alive. My dad, as we talked about, was one of the top bodybuilders, one of the first bodybuilders in the world. You would think, right, I'm growing up, and I used to idolize my dad even though I didn't see him because I had all these pictures with him, big muscles and 20-inch biceps and all this stuff, and I would tell kids that that's my dad. My dad could beat up your dad. But what nobody forgot to tell me is, Ty, claim your heritage, man. Get out there and start lifting weights. And I was always in decent shape, and I played sports a lot, and I did lift weights. But I should have gone crazy and claimed my heritage and built better than my dad. But oftentimes, it's just like the spoiled rich kid. I got these things naturally. I have decent genes. I don't really get fat, you know. But instead of going further than my dad, I underperformed my dad. And my dad was born with scarlet fever, all the heart problems in the world. Doctors say he'd be dead. My dad fell in love with fitness because it saved his life. And I was born like the spoiled kid with good genes that I didn't claim my heritage. So mentally, it sounds like, you know, you had this ability to focus in business and you've maybe coasted along a little bit too much on it. And even though, you know, you've done well, it's like now's time to claim your heritage to go, no, man, I was like Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
I had that. Let me bring that. There's no reason that I can't do that now.
Maybe I need to just start watercolor painting again. That was one of the things I would sit and do literally for hours was just watercolor paint. So,
man, one of my mentors, Alan Nation, said, Ty, people, and I, it, the, you know, number one, I get now thousands of emails at a time, sometimes in a day. And number one question is, what's my business destiny? Because I talk about this business destiny. And people are like, even the entrepreneurs, even the people making $1 million a week, they're still like, I'm not sure I'm doing the right thing. And, you know, doing the wrong things, like Pablo Picasso says, avoid the dichotomy of doing what you don't like so that you can have fun in your spare time. He said, find a way to make your spare time the same as your work, you know, your enjoyment. And so they asked me, it's like, Ty, you know, what should I be doing? And Alan Nation told me when I was a teenager, my second mentor, he said, Ty, look back when you were between 14 or 16. So whatever you wanted to be then, 14 to 16, Alan Nation said, that's when you had clarity of mind. You had less fear. You had less peer pressure. You were kind of, you know, at 14 to 16, for most people, it's kind of, you're old enough to think. In fact, I'm in Mensa, and Mensa, I was reading one of the Mensa IQ bulletins, and it says your IQ in many functions or many tests peaks around 14. So go, do not be afraid. I just spoke in Vegas, and I talked to a guy. I said, what'd you want to be 14 to 16? He said, tennis player. I said, what do you do now? He said, I'm in sales. I said, what do you sell? I said, shoes at Nordstrom. I said, man, why don't you, maybe you couldn't have been a pro tennis player, but I said, why don't you sell tennis equipment like you wanted to at 14, 16? He was like, a light bulb hit him. He was like, wow, that's such a good idea. And I said, he said, you know, I'm single and I don't have a girlfriend. What advice do you give me on social stuff interaction? And I said, well, why don't you, do you play tennis? He's like, no, I gave it up. I read somewhere weightlifting was better. And I started lifting weights. And I said, well, you know, you can lift weights a little bit, but if you like tennis, you can get in great shape. So I said, why don't you go play tennis, join a tennis club. You'll probably meet a wife, potential wife or girlfriend there. And then I said to him, you know, he was just like, wow, how do I get to that? And I said, it's a clarity of mind. You probably knew what you should do younger. So for you, if you liked water painting, you know, I don't know that that means always exactly, but there's clues there for you. Maybe yeah. You have a creative streak that needs to be let out a little bit more.
Oh, I definitely have a creative streak. I mean, my outlet right now for that is playing the guitar. And, you know, I think probably for me, it's more an act of omission, beginning to maybe even check in on the phone less, check email less, check Facebook less, and just start with those small wins to take a little bit of a step towards the bigger wins of just like multitasking less with the bigger projects. So,
yeah, for you, what about this? Take the 10 minutes, use the check email, put up watercolor board somewhere, and maybe not even watercolor, draw yourself a logo for your website. Draw, like, just engage, because if Dr. Mollem's research is correct, you're exactly right. It's just what Warren Buffett and Jay-Z told Steve Forbes in that YouTube interview. Your audience might want to check that out. It said, you know, Warren Buffett said, Benjamin Graham, my mentor, told me, what you want to do is not make any big mistakes, but you don't have to hit home runs. He said, if you hit a lot of base hits, one base at a time, first base, second base, third base, you end up over your lifetime hitting all, you know, making a lot of runs, scoring a lot of points. So for you, definitely make haste slowly, as Joel Salatin used to always tell me. Make haste slowly means immediately start on this concept of, I'm not going to multitask quite as much as I did. I'm not going to be the slave of technology. And also, if I can give you homework, Ben, and anybody listening, and even homework for myself to reread. There's a book on my, if you go to my website, I've got this, listing of books, and in my top 10, it's by Gary Keller. It's called The One Thing. Have you read that one?
No.
Read this thing. It's going to blow your mind. He built one of the second largest real estate brokerage or agency in the United States.
And the surprisingly simple truth behind extraordinary results.
It's amazing. I'll give you this one thing. I won't do a spoiler. Obviously, the one thing is saying focus on one thing at a time. But the second thing is the key that I got from that book. He says, you must be willing to embrace the chaos to do this. So basically, you can have two types of chaos in your life. You can have the chaos of trying to do everything and really not getting that much done. Or you can have the chaos of focus on one thing and let some things fall by the wayside. I just read this Hillary Clinton's autobiography called Hard Choices. Now, I'm not political. I'm not really Republican or Democrat. For whatever reason, I never got super excited about politics. But I read the book from the standpoint of Hillary Clinton was a very busy woman. She traveled a million miles. She went to 121 countries. She starts her day at 4 in the morning, is in the office at 7, works till 11 at night, doing, you know, hot, very powerful things like solving world crises and stuff as she was Secretary of State. So whether you agree with Hillary Clinton as her policies, that's irrelevant. I didn't read the book trying to figure out if she's politically correct for me. What I was blown away by is like she balances very well, and the president has to do the same thing of letting some things be chaotic, not handling some things. And at that level, you're talking about, oh, there was a, you know, there's a crisis in Honduras, and the president's like, well, I'm dealing with one thing here. So he embraces the chaos of missing some things. And if those presidents can do it on world affairs, I'm sure you and I can let a few things that we thought were so important, let them just fall by the wayside. Yeah. Let them be a little chaotic.
It's so annoying though, huh? To like think about in the back of your head all those things you might be missing. Like that's the hard part.
But Gary Keller says, he's like, next time, reframe that in your mind. That's the feeling of success, knowing some things are being left behind. Sherlock Holmes said in one of his books, of course, he's not a real character, but he said, the mind's like an attic. It gets full, man. So be careful what you put in there. Yeah. So I tell people, it's like in your tasks of things to do, it's like an attic. You will get full. We know on a physical basis, willpower, it talks about this in that book, but I've read this before. Willpower is a finite thing that you can – some people have more genetically than others. Some people have built it up just like stamina. But there's nobody who can run 10,000 miles without stopping. At some point, stamina is finite. So when it comes to the things you do, just realize you're not superhuman. You can push the limits. But like you said, some things you're going to have to go, ooh, I liked it. John Calipari, the University of Kentucky basketball coach that won a championship. He says grinding it out. That's what he talks about, like Ray Kroc. He said, you better learn to love the grind. The grind is that friction that you feel in life. Like in this case, ooh, I'm missing, because he goes, life is the grind. So if you don't love the grind, you don't love life. So every time I feel chaos, I go, Ty, smell that? That's being alive. There will be a day one day. Hopefully not too soon, Ben, for you or I. There'll be a day when we'll be 95. Maybe if we're lucky. We older, maybe, you know, fate takes us quicker. But if we are that age, there'll be a day when you can't handle all this at all. And so now while you can, learn to love a little bit of that grind, because that makes you alive, man. The day we don't have that feeling, like maybe something's incomplete, it means we're on our way out of this planet. So while you have it, use it to feel alive.
Yeah, I like it, man. Cool. Embrace the chaos. Well, yes. You know, obviously, if you're listening, I think that's a great challenge for you, and a challenge I'm going to give myself this week is to just pick one day, embrace the chaos, ignore email, ignore the phone, and just go do something that takes a great deal of focus and apply myself to it. And I would challenge the listeners, if you're listening in, try that out. Pick a day, do the same, be okay with the chaos. And also, if you do that, I would also like to hear how it went for you. And what I will do is put up a link over at bengreenfieldfitness.com/tie1. So if you go, by the way, bengreenfieldfitness.com/tie is the first ever podcast we did with Ty. So if you want to listen to that for more of a background of who Ty is, go check that out. But if you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/tie1, I'm going to give you a link to all the books that Ty and I just talked about, as well as Ty's online video series. But I'd also love to hear you give your feedback on whether you've dealt with this same problem that I have to deal with in terms of multitasking and how you plan on reprogramming your genetics, checking your email less, checking your phone less, and if you try this little challenge of going a day without it, how that went for you and what you accomplished. So head over to bengreenfieldfitness.com/tie1 to check that out. And if it turns out that you actually go over there and leave a comment, and enough of you do, and you actually liked this, then Ty and I are going to keep cracking away, and we'll come at you with another coaching session very soon. But show us that you're actually listening in by heading over there to leave your comment and visit the show notes. So, Ty, thanks, man.
Yeah, man. And one thing that I'll tell you, you know, the 67 steps, by the way, the reason I did that 67 steps, it's one a day for 67 days, as University College London research said. This whole thing about 21 days or 28 days to rewire your brain is probably not true. Their research showed about 66 days. I added one more for good luck, 67. And I tell people when they start it, you know, it's free. I decided I was going to give it, you know, charge a lot of money, but I decided, and I send a book with it. So a book that I bought a whole bunch of books called, I bought a few different ones depending on when I run out of one. And I send that to people free along with the 67 steps. You will have to pay the shipping. I think it's $4.95. I don't keep a penny of that. It goes to FedEx or whatever. I actually lose a couple bucks, but I don't care. I bought a whole bunch of this book. So if they go over there, the first video they get in the welcome, pay attention to, because it's relevant to this point. I say, this is a test for yourself. Can you stick to something for 67 days? Even though I hope my content is helpful, it's also helpful to literally create the discipline to stick through it. It's about 30 to 45 minutes, sometimes an hour a day. You can do it while, you know, audio, while you're jogging or whatever, for 67 days. Just the fact of doing that, you're rewiring your brain to be able to focus down. You don't want to be like you don't want to feel like I felt at the Amish. By the way, little practical tip. Once a year, I've been advising this. I advise this for you too, Ben. Find a farmer somewhere in the middle of America and be like, and farmers are always chronically overworked and underhelped. Be like, can I come for a weekend with my family? We'll get a hotel near you or all alone and just help you on the farm. And it's a great way you return. Man, nothing teaches you more about life biology than putting your fingers in the dirt and getting away from technology. And just if you find an old school farmer, buck some hay, feed some cows. It's a grounding effect. And every time I do it, I'm like, why don't I do this more often? So that's another great one. But do the 67 steps. That too uses technology, obviously, because you can, but you can listen into it. But it's important. I don't say that because it's like mine. And it's one of the things I'm most proud that I've ever done, because I see it really working. So, but my main thing is, even if you don't do the 67 steps, find one thing, like Gary Keller talks about it, and commit to do it. Try a new benchmark. Peter Drucker says when you get your time frames wrong, that's when you fail. So many people have, like, you know, lose 10 pounds in 10 days. I'm like, that's not enough. The two time frames I think are most important are 67 days from research, University College London, and then Peter F. Drucker, who's done almost more research than anyone on business when he was alive, 18 months. Those are your two time frames. So 67 days, reformulate, rewire, and then 18 months, reap the benefits of the rewiring. But it takes that long, at least 67 days. So that's my thoughts on that.
Okay, cool. Got it. Well, the 67 steps, there's a bunch of more information on it. Again, just go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/67steps. Or if you want to leave your thoughts about today, go over to bengreenfieldfitness.com/tie1. There's not very many people actually that I really have as a mentor that I've used as a coach or whose advice I actually sit down and listen to, but Ty is one of them. So I recommend that you check out his stuff. So, Ty, thanks for coming on, man.
Thank you, man. I appreciate all you do, too. So thanks so much.
All right, folks. This is Ben Greenfield and Ty Lopez signing out from BenGreenfieldFitness.com.
Visit BenGreenfieldFitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness, nutrition, and performance advice.